And welcome back to another week of This Week on Channel 9. I'm Brian Keller.
I'm Dan Fernandez.
And we've got a lot of stuff here, so let's jump right into it. So E3 happening this week.
Yes.
And lots of announcements coming out. My favorite, though, Netflix streaming coming to Xbox 360. How cool is that?
Now, you've been using this service on your Media Center?
Yeah, on Media Center, there's a tool called VMC Netflix plugin that you can run. It's built by a guy in the community. It doesn't come from Netflix or from Microsoft. So it's a little bit buggy. He's still working through a lot of stuff. It takes a little while to get it set up.
Mm-hmm.
But once you do, it's a really nice way of being able to access your instant viewing queue, because right now, otherwise, I have to watch it on a computer, right? But I want to be able to watch it in my living room.
Right, exactly.
So now I just go to my Xbox 360, I extend the application, I can watch it from there. But there's still those bugs. So I'm really excited to see Netflix officially supporting Xbox 360 as a target delivery platform.
Yeah, I think this is great. I think the only complaint I've seen about this is the selection, at least currently at launch, wasn't that great. But I mean, you can imagine this expanding over time, right?
It is. It all fundamentally has to do with the licensing of the content, right? If the content's licensed such that Netflix can deliver it to you, then they are delivering it to you. I've actually found that there's a lot of movie titles in there that I've really enjoyed watching that I wouldn't have otherwise added to my Netflix queue, because you have to invest the time for them to mail it to you and you mail it back.
Mm-hmm.
But with instant viewing, you just pop it on there and you spend 5 minutes. Is this interesting? There's sometimes it's a dud, but other times it's something that's really cool that you wouldn't have discovered otherwise.
Cool.
And they've got a lot of even newer stuff on there. They've got some of the series, like Weeds is on there, and some other things. So check it out.
The series you speak of. Okay, sounds criminal.
So GPS.
Yeah, GPS. So this is Roy Zisman's article, but he actually shows how you can both read and write data. GPS data, latitude and longitude, to geotag photos.
Programmatically. Got it.
So here's the C# code. The system.drawing.image class,
mm-hmm,
has this thing where you can add attributes. As long as you write it to a specific location, he shows you the source code how to do it. You can read and write attributes out. So it lets you easily geotag photos, and you can see how to do that programmatically.
That's cool. Another tool that I found recently is called GeoSetter. So I do a lot of hiking, and I've got cameras that I take with me, right? But my cameras don't have the concept of geotagging built in. They don't have my particular camera. Some of the newer cameras have this, but my particular camera doesn't have like a Bluetooth link that I can hook up to my GPS device.
Mm-hmm.
But what GeoSetter does, this is super cool. You can set your GPS in log mode. So let's say that I start hiking at 9 a.m. Synchronize that with the camera on your clock. And then you can be hiking along, and you get to 9:30, and you're on the top of the mountain, and you take a picture, and you go back to your PC, and you synchronize all of your pictures with your GPS log data, and then it automatically geotags it for you.
So how hard is this?
How hard? You basically point it at a directory of images, and you point it at your GPS log data, which you download off your GPS.
And then it does the auto time sync?
It automatically figures it out. So the biggest thing is just make sure that that those two clocks are synchronized when you start your hike, and you're good to go.
Okay. Well, that's great for, I guess, the stuff you're doing, which is... Is it espionage or is it just stalking? Is it?
You mean my backpacking trip to Patagonia?
Right.
My vacation?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. Mr. Smith.
So another one here. So speaking of mapping,
yeah.
Ed and I had talked about this camera that the Virtual Earth team uses,
right,
to get those really cool bird's eye views and the really great maps that you see on live.com. Here, Mark Brown, he had been blogging about the statistics for that camera. And here he did a Channel 9 video where he actually takes you through the factory and shows how that camera was built. So really cool if you're into that stuff.
Yeah, so he's got a series, then he's got a lot more stuff coming. So cool stuff by Mark.
Nice. So Terrarium, what's
this
about?
So Terrarium, I think folks are familiar. I think it was PDC 2001 or 2003. I think it was 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Originally came out. I think Mitch Walker actually worked on
it. That's right, yep.
The goal was to actually have code that could execute on different machines. You build animals or plants,
mm-hmm,
and then all your creatures work around, and you have certain attributes that you can set and certain points to set, and then it all comes together, and your creatures either survive or don't.
So it's kind of a reference app of one of the early .NET framework applications, but it's also got this contest element built in too.
Right, right. And all the code access security stuff. So, hey, wow, I'm executing somebody else's remote code.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
That was because back in those days, .NET security was, oh my God, you know, they kill kittens. but we don't. And so you have a funny story about using this internally.
So Ed Keim, who we have on the show from time to time.
Yes, Special Ed.
Yes, Special Ed. Back about 4 or 5 years ago when he was on at Microsoft, there was a contest internally to see which organization could get the most instances of Terrarium running within their organization so that we could do some real load tests when we were getting ready to ship .NET Framework 1.1, I think it was.
And this was a contest which Microsoft org can get the most Terrarium creatures.
Right, exactly. And so it would, you know, log that, you know, you're running it on your machine, I'm running it on my machine, it would send that data back to a server. So the idea was just, you know, encourage as many people to run it as possible. Well, Ed, we like to say that he hacked the competition. He basically found the server that this information was being logged to, and he went in and he took our entire organization and he just copied the entire org chart into there as if we had all been running it. And so all of a sudden, the marketing team went to like 100% participation. But he eventually fessed up, and his manager fessed up back to the contest people, and I think they had to like wash the car of one of the dev execs or something like that.
So. Yeah, yeah. Well, I thought that was pretty hilarious that there's a contest to see how this stuff. Ed reverse engineers it, yeah, so exactly. The organization automatically wins.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
but the Terrarium open source is actually really cool because what they're also doing is they're going through and they are changing it to use some of the new .NET framework constructs, some of the new C# features.
You know, you want to say lambdas.
Lambdas. They're using automatic properties. They're using extension methods. Extension methods. That sounds like a great lead into our next story.
Yeah, so a cool example of how they're bringing that stuff forward.
Mm-hmm.
One of the pains of working with things like enumerations is you have to always do this like by val, by type, mm-hmm. or do weird casting. Here's a simple example of where you want to actually have metadata on a specific attribute.
So this is Chris Peitschman. I'm sure I'm messing that up.
Yeah, I think you are. So Chris is an MVP. And next slide.
Yep.
So this actually shows the code. And you can see there's a description attribute there. Mm-hmm. And what you can do is create an extension method that makes it like literally just the very bottom code to description string to pull that value out. So if you wanted to, if you had an English as an enum, Spanish as an enum, but you want to have description of what that value actually means.
Okay.
Let's say you were doing, you know, description field or some application where you had a title and then you want to display a description of it.
Okay.
Rather than creating some own data type, you really want to use the enum. You can add a description attribute for it and then do that nasty code in the middle to do the get type of get val, a val to string to get a custom attribute to do the data type, blah, 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 blah.
Got it.
Yes, makes it easy.
Cool.
One line of code, two description.
Bada boom.
Yes.
So speaking of .NET extension libraries.
Yes, extension methods. So here's, and one of the interesting thing, and Carl's sort of been on the, I'm not sure this feature sucks, and then sort of swing back the other way.
This is Carl Seguin, who brought
Carl
us
Seguin.
A free ebook a few weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
He's getting rave reviews in the community, by the way. So people are still talking about that.
So. Yeah, yeah. So and the nice thing is, again, it's like a living book.
Yeah.
But the extension methods here, making it a library of reusable extension methods. So I know I've built my own, a bunch of them, for things like printing, debugging, logging, whatever. Having one library with reusable extension methods and hopefully having sort of same standards applied to those. Same data types is going to be great.
Right,
so.
And that's really what Carl's point is he says a lot of people are going off building these extension methods, and they're going in different directions. So when I inherit your code and I start you know, looking at these extension methods you built, that may not, you know, align with my understanding of what they're supposed to be. So what he's trying to do is trying to bring some unity to that, and so he started this CodePlex project. So good for him.
Yeah, I'm going to do a .email QQQ, you suck, Brian Kell. Extension method on all types.
Great. I can't wait. So Blue Screen of Death. So this is another video you filmed, right?
Yeah. So this is Daniel Pearson. One of the things Daniel does is he actually goes in and diagnoses, vendors that have blue screens and they don't know why, and they're building kernel mode drivers, right? So two types of memory: user, kernel. Kernel's where you get the wonderful blue screens, and he actually goes through, how do you diagnose this stuff? Mm-hmm. How do you get a memory dump and ways you can configure memory dump? And then even using tools like WinDBG, Windows debugging, I think it's the official acronym, to do things like even in-memory changes. So why don't we go to a clip, and this is actually, we'll go to the Notepad clip where he actually changes the memory values address space in Notepad using WinDBG. So let's go to the clip.
See an ASCII representation. So we can see the word here, Notepad, and see, you'll see it's padded. That's because we're using Unicode. So we can actually use a du command, which is dump Unicode. If I do that again, we're actually, the debugger formats that, and it knows where the null is at the end of the string.
So ah, beautiful.
So what we actually see here is we're actually using some other text that would be part of, like, the, could be part of the message table or resource strings or something like that.
Yeah, so if it was, say, resource strings that Notepad in German or something could need all that memory, for example.
Correct, yeah. So we can have for different localizations and things like that. So as I said, because this is live, I can actually go ahead and make some changes to this.
So we're going to rename this app?
That's right. So what I can do here is I'm just going to go through and I'm just going to use the F command, which is fill. And so I'm just going to basically fill this with zeros just to get it all out of the way so I can rewrite something else over the top. So I'm just going to say the address I want to use, and I'll say how much. So I'm saying 10 in hex, 16 bytes, which will be enough to fill that. And I'll just say the pattern I wish to use, which is zeros. So I enter that in, and it says it's gone and filled that number. So if I actually go and look back at that memory now, as you see, it's all changed. That also has all become zeros.
Awesome.
Okay.
Now, you've shown a lot of these commands. Is this in the help file, or where would somebody find more reference for some of the shortcut commands that you're running here?
Yeah, so all these commands are documented in the help file. So
okay.
It's an excellent resource for people who are wanting to start out in debugging.
Mm-hmm.
Is get the tools, start reading through the help file, a lot of different examples about and different commands to use and things like that.
And run a virtual machine so you don't kill anything. Is that that?
Yeah, exactly. It's very very useful to do this kind of testing.
Awesome.
Okay, so now I have the ability to actually go ahead and write some data in there. So any of the E commands, and again, these, I could use EB for bytes, I could use ED for D words. Because I wish to use Unicode string, I'm going to use the DU equivalent, which is EU. So I just put EU and just type in the address that I want to write to. So again, the same address we're using.
Mm-hmm.
And we could put here Niners for channel 9.
Awesome.
Okay, so I go and enter that, and that's been successfully added. So I go and do the DC command, and you'll see now that we've gone from Notepad to blanked out, and we now actually have Niners there.
Awesome.
And so we have enough space left in here, so that's null terminated,
mm-hmm.
so everything should work. So I go ahead and just hit G again, as I was doing before. On my application, if I switch back, you see at the top it says About Niners, and we see Microsoft Niners.
Oh, that's, I love it. Let's see if we can get a nice shot there. Awesome.
All right, so that's a great example of how you can debug blue screens. So that's a good lead into ASP.NET debugging on a production server.
Right.
So this is an article that Eric Porter on the Channel 9 development team.
Human compiler.
Yes. He linked to this in his Twitter feed. And it's basically a walkthrough that talks about, you know, you've got this ASP.NET server, it's running in production, you can't afford to take it down or take it offline to try and figure out what's going on. How do you debug this server in production?
Right.
So I actually read through this tutorial last night. I think I can figure it out. I'm just going to try and debug, let's debug channel 9 while we're here.
You sure you want to debug production?
Yeah, I read the tutorial, so I think it should be no problem.
Oh,
there,
geez,
so.
Get the hell, I don't know if you...
And F5... Okay, I won't try to do that here. So maybe next week we'll bring you a live demo once I get the kinks ironed out.
Jackass.
Right. So, speaking of ASP.NET for dummies like me.
Yeah, so so 4 free chapters of ASP.NET 3.5. So this is, you want Link for Dummies,
mm-hmm.
Language Integrated Query. This goes into detail. And again, it's all free. So great stuff available for download now.
And where do you find this?
This is msdn.com/beginner. Now, when you go under web, you'll see three tiers. This is tier three because this is like the most advanced beginner stuff.
Okay.
So really the goal there, and this is a project that Jacqueline's been working on since, I don't know, since we launched like 2005. But the goal is to make it really easy for anyone. So if you have friends that are interested in getting into software development, there's a Windows and Web track, and it starts with how do web applications work? How is it a blog or website in D.C. can be read by somebody in Seattle? And then it goes through analogies like, oh, it's like the post office, where if you mail somebody something, it goes to their address, except the address is called an IP address. And then it gets weird. No. So, but it's pretty cool. It explains things, makes it easy. If you know somebody, msdn.com/beginner.
Nice. Good stuff. Charles Fitzgerald. So
yes.
he used to be down the hall from us until he left Microsoft.
Yeah, so Charles Fitzgerald has that what I'd call old school Microsoft wit. He's now ex-Microsoft. But one of the things, he writes a blog platform on.
Couldn't get any other domain names, huh, Charles?
That was the cheap one.
Yeah.
He'll probably say, you are too stupid to ride yes. this blog. But the hilarious part was IBM made some big PR announcement that they can now interoperate between Second Life, meaning past characters between IBM and Second Life. So I'll just read this. It says, evidently the tumbleweed avatar was successfully teleported from Second Life into an enterprise-class IBM virtual world running on a mainframe, which they want you to know are more relevant than ever, especially for really popular applications like interoperable enterprise-class virtual worlds. Hey-o! Unfortunately, no observers were present in either virtual world to verify the claim.
Nice, nice.
So you got to love the tumbleweed and the fact that no one uses Second Life.
Yeah,
so.
Well, I'm sure we'll get some emails on that. But
Yeah.
But
so speaking of requests, getting everybody to help us out here.
Speaking of MMOs,
yeah,
actually. So Scott Hanselman, if you follow his blog, you know that he's been building this Baby Smash application in WPF, and we talked about that. It was on Lifehacker and all that stuff. And he put together a feature list that you can go in and submit your own features and vote on those features.
Feedback.babysmash.com.
Exactly. And so, of course, I had to go in there and log a request to add an MMO element to Baby Smash. And actually, if I may just read my use case description.
Please, please.
Everybody knows that babies are social creatures who enjoy interacting with other babies, but who can be bothered to get out of the house these days to bring babies together? This feature would allow babies of all shapes and sizes from around the world to smash together. A core feature of this use case would revolve around the notion of establishing a clan-based system so that babies with similar interests could get together and smash. Please establish two separate Baby Smash MMO servers, Baby Smash Co-op and Baby versus Baby. So if you agree with my suggestion, please go to feedback.babysmash.com and vote for it.
So we started this. You started this last
yes,
night to give you the credit.
Yeah, I started it as a joke. And
yes, and we are now the number one feature request with 33 votes.
That's
so,
right.
So get out there, America.
Vote
and
early.
Help.
Vote often.
Vote early. Vote often. And we need to add MMO and baby clans.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great time to be a baby. I wish we had those when I was a baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Man. So next kind of topic here. So last week I asked for help on understanding lambdas.
Yes.
And I said there were prizes. And WiseMX and Little Guru sent me some great help topics. So thank you for that. If you email me, brian.keller@microsoft.com, I will work with you to get you your prizes. So
you have a selection, a plethora for them to choose. If they don't want the pink ribbon... They can choose something else.
Well,
what do you have for them? Is it going to be like a used sock? Or?
we'll figure that out, yeah.
It's like this old PDC shirt has been worn.
Exactly. But it's washed. So that brings us to
Picks of the Week. Yes. So what is this?
All right. So so Brian Harry, blogging as usual, talking about the latest Power Tools release for Team Foundation Server. So Power Tools add a lot of functionality to Team Foundation Server, and other products too have their Power Tools. Well, Power Tools, there's several of them that are really popular. Process Template Editor helps you visually edit the process templates that exist within Team Foundation Server. Another one is the best practices analyzer. So if you're fighting, like trying to figure out why, you know, Team Foundation Server is throwing errors in the event log or something, it might be because you have something configured wrong. So run the best practices analyzer, and it's the same tool that Microsoft Support uses to help diagnose Team Foundation Server. But the latest Power Tools release has a number of refreshes to a lot of these components. My favorite, though, has to be the improved ability to subscribe to Team Foundation Server alerts. So TFS alerts has existed in Team Foundation Server for a while, but it hasn't really lived up to people's expectations of what an alerting system should be. Mm-hmm. So with this Power Tools, this is a big leap forward in terms of helping you say, I want to understand, you know, when this particular work item changes, or when it moves to a particular state, or when a work item gets assigned to me, and then find various ways of getting those alerts sent to you.
Text? Can I get a text message yet?
You could probably hook it so you could do that. Yeah. By default, of course, you know, we don't do text messages, but I'm sure you could. Actually, you could email.
Like you could do the email hack, thing.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. So that's my pick of the week.
All right, cool stuff.
And since your laptop died, if you
yeah, want. So this is a Graffiti Research Lab. So this is a C++ laser tag. GRL, Graffiti Research Lab, did an example where they actually take a projector, and they do a number of different things to it, power cord, blah, 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 and some software that they've built that allows it to be projected on huge surfaces. And then using things like a laser pen, the projector will actually light parts where the laser pen is going. So they literally can do, like, light graffiti on a board. And really, let's just go to the video.
And this isn't brand new. This is something we just discovered ourselves. But
So here's the interesting part. Brian Peek, Mr. Coding for Fun, or mm-hmm. one of our Coding for Fun guys, sent me the link here, and he thinks he can actually build this using some of the Wiimote hack stuff.
Yes, sweet,
exactly.
Well, you've got to see this. Let's just go to the clip here.
Let's go to the clip. Whoa, oh, 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 fast mini laser beam, and let me wipe out the wicked and clean. Pass me the laser beam and make me wipe out the wicked and clean. Them a come with them chopper, yes, but I and I know that no proper. Them a come with them 45, but I and I say we got to survive. Them coming on the scene, but they've got to be clean. Don't bring your M16, I mean we drop in me laser beam. So pass me the laser beam and make me wipe out the wicked them clean. Pass me the laser beam and make me wipe out the wicked them clean. They might come with them chopper, yes, but I and I know that's not proper. They might come with them 45, but I and I. So great stuff there. Looking forward to Brian coming up with a Wiimote sample on that. Hopefully. That would be awesome. That would be awesome.
We're signing him up. We're committing him this week on this show. And that about does it for this week on Channel 9.
All right. Thanks, everyone.
To cut at some point. Wow.
All right. Just tell me.
Should we?
Do we have a power tool I can just point to your head?
Oh, man. Oh, that's what happens when neither one of us are getting any sleep.